BCFM Community Radio for Bristol on 93.2 FM. For more information or to listen live on the internet, go to our website at www.bcfm.org.uk. BCFM, your radio.
Hello and welcome to Dalek Radio. Well, as this perfectly charming ditty fades away, we're broadcasting from Dalek Studios in the heart of Bristol, right by Queen Square. This programme is sponsored by The Converging World, an organisation that aims to create a world where everyone has equal access to resources while minimising their impact on the planet. We're going to hear from Simon Manley, the director of The Converging World charity, courtesy of Anthea Page. Have you ever walked past luminous posters advertising gigs and you walk past and notice them, or perhaps you don't? Detectives of Perspective will be a name that may be familiar to you. They're a collection of DJs, and we're going to hear from Ross Chester. Malcolm Grieve, the actor, is going to read a specially abridged version of Cider with Rosie, and that's really something I'm going to look forward to, because it really is very good. We're going to hear from Jeff Sparks. He went to Iron Maiden during the week, so we're going to hear his review of the gig and what's on for this week. First, a more light-hearted take on the news, courtesy of our producer, Matt Heap, with Matt's Muses.
Thank you, John. Just drying out after all this rain. It's time for Matt's Muses, where we have some current affairs articles that are hopefully a bit more light-hearted than you might be used to in the news. I've only got 5 minutes, so we'll see how I do. Starting with the theme of children, a couple are complaining to the Church of England after the noisy toddler was ordered out of their wedding. But more and more couples are banning children altogether, risking the wrath of family and friends as they do so. Barry Long has been a wedding planner since 1974. He says it wasn't so much of an issue about 10 years ago. He now estimates about half of weddings stipulate that children are not allowed. It's definitely become more prevalent, because children perhaps are more disruptive than they used to be. Not having children at a wedding causes all kinds of rifts. Rona Williams, in her 30s, refused to attend the wedding of a close friend for that reason, and their friendship still hasn't recovered. It's quite amusing looking at some of the blogs on this article on the BBC website. Someone was quoted as saying, "My husband and I were invited to a wedding of one of our good friends. At the bottom of the invitation was written, 'No ankle biters, please.' I thought that was awful." Another blog on the BBC website says, "I am from continental Europe. Living in London for many years, I cannot believe what I'm reading. Some people have lost all sense of common sense in this country, banning children from weddings as if they were some sort of nuisance. What next?" John from Southampton says, "I always love to see 'Sorry, no children' on an invite. It gives me a fantastic excuse not to go myself. Then I can stay at home and enjoy a day with my kids whilst my wife goes to the poxy wedding." From children to teenagers, a teenager who thought movement in her underwear bra was caused by her vibrating mobile phone found instead a bat curled up asleep inside her bra. Abby Hawkins, 19, of Norwich, had been wearing the bra for 5 hours before she realised what was causing the vibration. The bat was captured by one of her colleagues and released. And on the subject of teenagers, now 60-year-old Lakshmi Das from India started begging when she was 16. She has recently deposited her earnings in an Indian bank in Calcutta. It was a bit more than a usual mundane money transfer. Miss Das handed over 91 kilograms of coins, the produce of 44 years of hard begging, enabling her to open up an account and qualify for a credit card. Bank officials say they are still counting the thousands of her coins and do not know yet the exact amount. Coins are generally two-sided, and that's what's been claimed of a recent sighting of a pheasant in the grounds of Himley Hall near Dudley. photographs were sent to the BBC purporting to show this bird with two heads. However, an artist from Birmingham said the bird looked remarkably similar to one of her creations. She said that the one that she gave away recently could be the reason for this hoax. And also on the subject of two-sided, we go to two-faced. Bush has recently had to apologise to the Italian Prime Minister, Silvio Berlusconi, for a brief briefing describing him as a political amateur who is hated by many. Only last month, Mr. Bush visited his old ally, calling him a good friend. On the subject of Bush, a citizens group in San Francisco wants to pay an ironic tribute to President Bush when he leaves office by naming a sewage plant after him. It's important to remember our leaders in the right historical context, said petition organiser Brian McConnell. The Republican Party thinks the plan stinks and will fight the measure. Mr. Bush is due to leave office in January 2009. And from sewage to rubbish. A self-confessed rubbish golfer won £15,000 after fluking a hole in one. Occasional golfer Alan Irrington, 43, was averaging 7 shots a hole whilst playing at a staff event. But he hit a perfect shot on the par 3 hole and it bounced once before going in, earning himself a Volkswagen Golf. He says his wife would be driving the new car. And from the sport of golf onto the sport of rugby, New Zealand rugby fans watching a regular sports programme found themselves viewing hardcore pornography instead on Sunday afternoon. 4 minutes of pornography interrupted sports coverage on the Prime television channel after what a spokesman described as a distribution mix-up. The pornographic footage was meant for an adult pay-per-view channel. Instead, it found its way onto a regular free-to-air programme called Grassroots Rugby. Rival television channels reported that some viewers were angry about the broadcast, which may have been seen by children. And that brings us back around to the start of today's Matt's Muses, Children at Weddings. Hope you enjoyed that. Hope the rain's not getting you down too much. And I hand it back across to John.
Thank you very much to Matt. Now we're going to hear from Jurassic 5 with their track J-Lo.
We be the crew, guess who? The J-U-R-A-S-S-I-C. We're in the place to be, it don't stop. We got the rhythm that makes your fingers snap. Crackle, pop, pop, fizz, fizz. We're known to give a show plus handle our business. Stress, stress, we destroy, we're known to make noises, we original B-boys. In the flesh, created to the death, creates the ill scenes when we manifest. Yes, I feel the vibe too, cause it's the butter from the crew, cause we original who? Wanna tussle, flex vocal muscle, while we kick the style that busts your blood vessels. With the rhythm, the 96 stylism, pick up and pillar, fill them, kill them with your vocalism.
I shoot the gift, I'm planning the bow split. Vocals are coming thicker than Anna Nicole Smith. Malignant metaphors and gotcha state nerves. We conjugate verbs and constipate nerves like you. I'm here to end a conspiracy fearlessly, so you can really see the rhythm seas
at hand.
I'm tuna fish on the stick ship, the eclectic, hectic, desperate, eccentric.
Ow! Yeah! C! Jim C!
For the niggas who feel that the 24 karat plus the way you live and get your underwater baptism. Believe it or not, it's the rugged and raw. Put the bullet in the head of four at Mount Rushmore.
Yeah. Release the beast from within. Baptize gins. Keep company with friends that repel sin. I'm out to winning, no pretending. Fuck the First Amendment. My speech was free the day that my soul descended.
Earthbound, we break sound, bury us. Some niggas can rhyme, but they got no character. So we're preparing you for war. Don't give up the fight. You need to stand up for your rights.
And grab a mic and get loose. Produce the juice that keeps the head on collision with the new world order. Opposition, competition, none. There's only one in the universe that knows the final outcome.
We got incarcerated minds, men, women, and enzymes. Vibing off the rhymes sent from the divine essence.
Presence effervescence,
not to be contested.
Some miss the message, go ahead and bless.
So don't mistake us for a crew that used to hit me on some underground. Sending 5 wild style shit.
We be the crew, guess who? And it'll be the JU 95 AD.
We be
causing ramifications. Physicians sending brothers and grandma vacations if they don't listen. Competition busting shots and people basing, but we can relieve constipation.
Jurassic 5 MCs, and we got the cure for this rap disease. So come on everybody, let's all get down,
cause I'm down by law and I know my way around.
That was J-Lo by the Jurassic 5.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk, your local community radio run by volunteers. Log on to our website at dialectradio.co.uk to find out more.
Well, part of the reason we're on air at all is courtesy of our sponsorship by The Converging World. They sponsor our show every week. Anthony Page went along to interview the director, Simon Manley. The Converging World is, of course, the organisation in Bristol that sponsors us and aims to create a world where everyone has equal access to resources while minimising their impacts on the planet.
My name is Simon Manley. I'm the director for The Converging World, which is a Bristol-based climate change charity. As a climate change charity, we recognise that this is an incredibly complicated problem, and there are a number of different facets that we're trying to address through our single model. And those three different facets are basically centred around, firstly, trying to wean individuals and organisations off their dependency on fossil fuel-based energy. Its dependency is obviously causing an incredible amount of carbon emissions in the atmosphere, and this is something that's sort of core to our objectives. The second thing is to try and address the drastic inequalities that have been caused mainly in the developing world through our current model of economic growth, so capitalism. And then thirdly is to try and empower and raise awareness amongst communities and individuals in the developed world around how to react responsibly to the climate change challenge.
How do you think people in Bristol feel about the inequalities of the world generally?
There is a very strong legacy in Bristol in the charity sector, and certainly lots of organisations that I've come across through this work seem to be incredibly motivated around supporting developing world and sustainable development causes. And so I think the awareness is pretty strong in the Bristol area. What we want individuals and communities in Bristol to do is to join us and become a member. It's probably worth explaining how our model works in order to explain how they can do that. The three things that I talked about earlier on involving weaning people off the dependency on fossil fuels, addressing the inequalities of the developing world, and engaging communities in the developed world. We've created a model to address all of those three things by essentially centres around the fact that we build renewable energy or wind turbines through wind turbines in India right at the moment. That's where our first project is based. The wind turbines generate electricity, obviously, which we sell to the Indian state grid, and that gives us a revenue stream. And that revenue stream we donate to support sustainable development in India. So by doing those two things, we are putting green energy into a fast-growing economy, and at the same time trying to address the inequalities or indeed the development requirements of some of the poorest communities in India. But the second thing that the turbines generate for us in India are carbon credits, and these we certify through the highest possible standards and then offer them to businesses, principally in the Bristol area, as part of their carbon reduction and offset strategy. And all of the money that we generate through that activity we then offer out to community-based carbon reduction projects in the Bristol area to try and support and empower individuals and communities around the carbon reduction agenda. So we're using this single asset, which is the turbine, to facilitate those three things that I mentioned earlier on.
So if people wanted to help in the most positive way, would it be to sign up to buy collectively a wind turbine by contributing a small amount every month?
That would be fantastic if we were able to sort of gather groups of common interest around that particular objective. The wind turbines do cost quite a lot, and so it is quite a sort of a long-term funding play, but at the same time it would be wonderful if we could form groups of common interest around this objective of funding our turbines. At the most simple level, the way that individuals and communities can support us would be through either making a donation, which we will use to build more turbines in India, or through buying carbon credits, if that's appropriate and that's the sort of the strategy that you want to go down in terms of if you feel positive about offsetting. Either way, that money will be channeled either into building turbines in India, or if it's carbon credits that you buy, we'll channel all that revenue into Bristol-based community carbon reduction projects. Now, if you're listening to this and you're not in a position to support us financially, but you do belong to a community group in Bristol that is doing something around social improvement or indeed carbon reduction, then again we could help you, because we are setting up a fund which we want to eventually offer out to groups such as yours to support you, build you into our network and share best practice around other groups doing similar things in the area and eventually across the whole of the southwest of England.
Could you just describe in what way a group could get involved with saving energy? For example, like an eco group, in what practical way could they save energy to get their carbon reduction down?
Well, something that we found quite quickly is that, especially in the Bristol area, that there are a whole number of community groups already out there doing this, and it could be anything from a food cooperative, car sharing schemes, cycle networks, all sorts of different initiatives. Now, we don't want to reinvent the wheel, so we're aware that there are already numerous groups out there doing something around carbon emissions and community improvement, and therefore we want them to come to us if possible and explain what they do, and so that we can build them into our project portfolio and eventually offer them for some sort of financial and sort of awareness raising support.
And what's your website address?
The website is www.theconvergingworld.org.
Well, thank you to Simon Manley, the director of The Converging World. Now, it's the Stone Roses with Fool's Gold. We'll be right back. That was Fool's Gold. Now, if you walk around town and see a lot of luminous posters every now and again, and kind of walk past them, because that's not your kind of thing, then you could learn something useful and interesting about Bristol subculture. If you do look at these things, then here is your chance to hear from somebody you've probably seen behind a DJ stand, but you've never spoken to. This is an interview with Ross Chester of Detectives of Perspective, a collective of DJs.
Good afternoon. We got Ross with us today.
Yeah. Hello.
Hi, Ross. You're from Detectives of Perspective.
That's right.
They are a pretty well-known name now in Bristol clubbing. It'd be interesting to ask the question, how and when did you guys first get together?
Yeah, well, it's some time ago now. I think we're quite old in clubbing terms. 7 years now we've been going on, which is not many people last that long in the club scene, but... we first got together basically with one of our friends who was wanted to do a charity bike ride around Brazil, and we were all bedroom DJs, we all lived together, there was about four or five of us, and he said, okay, well why not try and put on a small club night where we'll just get together, we'll take our decks down to a local pub on a Thursday night and just play some tunes, advertise it with some black and white photocopy flyers and see where it goes from there.
Which pub was that?
That was now known as the Croft. It was the Brew House at the time. So I think it's had a couple of incarnations since then, but now known as the Croft.
So to me, Detectives of Perspective is a fairly unusual name. How did you come up with it?
Yeah, well, it's not my own doing. It's taken from relatively unknown Red Hot Chili Pepper song called Walkabout, and it's just something that stuck in my mind for a few years. I didn't ever know why I was going to use it or what I was going to use it for, and then when we started this thing up, I thought, oh, well, it's a strange name, but probably one of those ones that will stick in people's minds.
So it wasn't chosen for any like musical affiliation with the Red Hot Chili Peppers in your sets?
No, not at all. I don't think any of us have probably played any Red Hot Chili Peppers in any of our sets, although maybe one day we should play that Walkabout song where the names come from.
Yeah, certainly. We'll talk about your seventh birthday later on in the interview. So, if not the Red Hot Chili Peppers, what have been your musical influences?
Well, we've been going on for, like I say, quite some time now. My influences are not necessarily in the dance music world. I listen to a lot of guitar music, and across the board in all different genres. But I think that helps because it allows you to understand all the different feels of different types of music, and it allows you to... You never really go in or out of style, I think, and that's probably what gives us a bit of longevity in that... You know, we don't play a particular style of music. We're not into the latest craze, but we're not into, you know, we will play anything. So, therefore, we're never really fully in fashion, but we're never out of fashion, and hopefully that'll give us some longevity.
So, Detectives, how many of you are there in the collective?
Yeah, well, when we started off, like I said, from when we were all bedroom DJs, there was probably about eight or nine of us then. And that ranged from not just DJs, but artists, photographers, and some musicians. We had live musicians with us at the start. Over the years, when people have got a little bit older and their life patterns have changed, we've dropped a few members, gained a few members, and now we're sort of around the maybe four or five core contributors, and then there's still another sort of four or five that will join us on any one night and add something different to each individual night that we do.
You mentioned live musicians. I've got very fond memories of watching you play at the Croft with live musicians. Are there any plans to reintroduce those?
We will do eventually. We've not been back to the Croft now for probably about 3 years, and it is on the cards actually. We do call it home. We've moved to Timbuktu. We've been there now for 4 years, and that's treated us really well. But we're starting to think about what our next step is. And although the Croft is probably a little bit smaller, it's got a great live music vibe. So we probably will go back and start doing some live music in there again, because, as I say, it's one of our original influences was with live music.
So for somebody who's not been to see the Detectives yet, what kind of genres of music can they look forward to if they go and see you for an evening?
Yeah, well, like I say, we've got we cross the board, and we have a number of DJs, but we tend to sort of build up through the night, from perhaps some hip hop and funk, through some turntablism with breakbeats, and then perhaps finishing with drum and bass. But that sounds to simplify it. It goes everywhere in between, and we'll play pop music, rock music, you know, all the various different sub-genres of all of those. As long as it gets people smiling and dancing, then that's the main thing, and it'll get played.
How unique would you say you were in Bristol, given that you have such a wide mix of genres? Are there any rivals out there doing a similar thing?
Yeah, there's certainly some rivals out there, but we like to think that we're friendly rivals now. We maybe not would have been over the years. There's a couple of nights that we've sort of we've come up against. You know, it's a friendly place, and Bristol is a great scene for all the clubbers and promoters coming together and work on the Unity project as well, which is a combination of 30 club promoters all coming together, or 30 plus club promoters coming together. So we've had a little bit over the years, but it's always been friendly.
A quick plug for Unity whilst we're here. When is it?
Unity is on Saturday, the 26th of July. Probably the last one at Lakota. There's, like I say, 30 plus promoters, all the best favourite promoters from across the city all coming together for a charity event. Everyone's involved, putting their time and efforts in for free, with the money going to the Basement Project and Bristol Music Festival, and also to push forward the Bristol music scene in general.
So, sorry, the Basement Project is?
The Basement Project's a charity for young people, which is based around music. It's something that came to my awareness some years ago when Ronnie Size won his Mercury Prize. He put all his prize money into the Basement Project, which is where he spent his time when he was growing up and learning how to use all the musical equipment. So it's still going. It's still there. They haven't got much money, but basically it's just somewhere for kids to come in off the street for free and learn how to use music equipment and try and channel some of their energies through into that.
So the next new talent from Bristol could well be yielded from that project?
Well, there has been a number of new talents that have come through there, and there's definitely one. I remember seeing someone down there recently who was a young MC, and he looked really good, so I wouldn't be surprised if he comes out of that and does something in the future.
Yeah, brilliant. So in 7 years then, Ross, it's a long time, as you said before. You must have had some ups and downs. Can you tell us a little bit about some high points, either of the detectives as a whole or your kind of memories of that?
Sure, yeah. Well, over those 7 years, we've probably booked all of the DJs now that we've and acts that we've ever wanted to, including DJ Shadow and Cut Chemist. But probably our staple is working with the Ninja Tune crew. Ninja Tune is we do a Solid Steel night with Ninja Tune. The Solid Steel is the radio show that comes out the back of the Ninja Tune record label. The Ninja Tune label was something that I've been into for years, long before I started DJing. We've now got a very, very close working relationship with them. We've booked most of their DJs, and the fact that we can speak to them on a regular basis about projects that they're into, projects that we're into, and working really closely with people that I idolised, it is brilliant. It's really good. So that's probably the high point, and it's an ongoing thing. The other real one, I guess, is just, and it's going to sound a bit corny, but you know, those nights where you have a dance floor with people with their arms in the air. Doesn't matter who the DJ is, whether it's a local resident or it's a multi-million album selling DJ. It's just having the crowd all smiling with their arms in the air come sort of 1 o'clock in the morning. That is the high point, and that can happen on any night.
Well, you've had your high points. I'm going to have to ask you about the flip side of the coin here. Any excruciatingly embarrassing low points?
The one that I can remember is a night that we did probably about a year ago now with DJ Kentaro. We've done two nights with DJ Kentaro now. The first one, he's a turntablist, a world DMC champion turntablist from Japan, who we'd had across to play for us once, and it was a great show. We got a bit carried away and asked him to come back 3 months later, and it was almost a private show the second time round. Although we heavily advertised it, no one turned up because it was only 3 months after the time before. So it was, like I say, almost a private show with perhaps about, you know, 20, 30 people there watching him. He'd flown from Japan to do that show. On that same night, he actually flooded his hotel room and caused £2,000 to £3,000 worth of damage on that one night as well. So not only did he have no one to play to, he also caused all that damage to the hotel. So yeah, that was
expensive gig for him.
It was an expensive gig for him, yeah, that's right. I mean, we still had to pay him his fee, but I think he spent most of that on putting the hotel back together again.
So it'll be a while before you ask him back.
Yeah, like I say, he's a great DJ, and we built up quite a good friendship with him. And he's on the Ninja Tune label, so it all sort of ties in with the family affair, and we all laugh about it now. But yeah, we will have him back one day, but we'll make sure he brings his wetsuit this time.
So quickly then, Glastonbury, we've just had it. You've had a presence there at Silent Disco.
That's right.
I believe closing the festival.
That's right. Yeah. Well, as good as we were the last people to play in the Silent Disco, other than their residents. So it was pretty early on. Sunday night, Monday morning. The sun came up during our set for Monday morning. People were walking past with their tents on their back on the way home. So yeah, it was a pretty late set, but it went really well. One of the surrealist moments of my DJing career, I think. Playing to people without actually being able to hear the music properly, and people singing along to your favourite records.
Excellent. Any new types of music you've heard that have excited you, like brand new genres?
Yeah, I think in Bristol there's dubstep, which is probably not that new anymore. It's probably been around for at least a couple of years in Bristol and London, but it's a big thing, and there's, as with all genres, there's a lot of music that people are just chucking out there and it isn't particularly good, but there's also some tunes in there that are excellent and they are really groundbreaking, they are making a big difference, and there's two or three producers in Bristol that are setting the scene, and I think it has got some life in it. I think it will go on for a good few years, so yeah, that's really exciting.
So the music industry as a whole has got a lot more new genres to look forward to, in your opinion, in the future?
I think so, yeah. It's one of those things, as you get a bit older, you always wonder how it could possibly change, what new styles are out there, where it can come from. But every few months I hear something new and think, okay, right, that's where it's going, and hopefully that's going to be the same forever.
Okay, well, Ross, we have run out of time, unfortunately. So thank you very much for joining us, and we look forward to talking to you again soon.
Yeah, thank you for your time.
Thanks to Ross Chester. This is De La Soul with a classic, Tread Water.
I was walking on the water when I saw a crocodile. He had daisies in his hat, so I stopped him for a while. Delivered me a message, a massage to soothe my stage. What it was more than plug, a dosage more than Daisy Age. Conversation grew a rule, which the crowd will roar by millions. With the crocodile, said Dove, you must look for now the villains. Try to hold you underwater, but one thing we all must heed. Sony Walkman, keep us walking. De La Soul can help you breathe when you tread water. Walked along my journey, I thought, what have I just learned? In a flash, I saw commotion. There was movement in these ferns. Silently, the silence came. Was it the end of my world? I shouted out in fear, who's there? It's me, said Mr. Squirrel. I've searched for you all over. Now you're found, no time to waste. We must find the preacher man. We must find the PA mace. For my population's dying, and we're all in tune to doom. Like your daisy, I need water, I need chestnuts to consume. Mr. Squirrel, I said, I'm sorry, but the problem can't be solved if there's no one here to help and no one to get involved. Always look to the positive and never drop your head, for the water will engulf us if you do not dare to tread. So let's tread water. Tread water. Tread water.
one weary day I woke. My alarm said plug time's up. Spilt my bath up with the water, goggled with my goggle cup. As I bathe, I felt a presence, and I'm sort of ticklish. I looked down and then around, and I heard, hi, I'm Mr. Fish. How do you do? As for me, I'm in tip-top shape today. Cause my water's clean, and no one's menu says fresh fish fillet. See, I look past all my worries, which is something you must do. Throw your fed up, throw your head up, with this advice from me to you. And that's to tread water. Day when unexplained, time was finding nothing fun. As I walked along the sidewalk, I heard, excuse me, plug one, plug from one, my plug soul, one. They lie, that is. I hollered, yes, are you talking to me? No alarm, and he said, let me introduce myself. I'm Mr. Monkey. Mr. Monkey, I pledge you slap a five. Now how does your problem meet? He said, my bananas are at their ripest, but they all stand at 3 feet. My swinging hand is bandaged up. Could you help me with this chore? I brought him down to the native shop and brought him copies of the De La Store, which assisted well in his elevation. Now all bananas was at his grasp. He decided with this accomplished, he would put me onto the path. He told me to live by the inner sound, y'all, which would bring me health and showbiz. Then to use them, not abuse them, and remember the word that got me to him, and that is the tread water. Tread water.
That was Treadwater by De La Soul. Now it's time for the actor Malcolm Grieve to return with more of his wonderful reading of Cider with Rosie.
Cider with Rosie by Laurie Lee. The village to which her family had come was a scattering of some 20 to 30 houses down the southeast slope of a valley. The valley was narrow, steep, and almost entirely cut off. It was also a funnel for winds, a channel for the floods, and a jungly, bird-crammed, insect-hopping sun-trap, whenever there happened to be any sun. It was not high and open like the Windrush country, but had secret origins, having been gouged from the escarpment by the melting ice caps, some time before we got there. The old flood terraces still showed on the slopes, along which the cows walked sideways. Like an island, it was possessed of curious survivals, rare orchids and Roman snails, and there were chemical qualities in the limestone springs which gave the women pre-Raphaelite goiters. The sides of the valley were rich in pasture and the crests heavily covered in beechwoods. Living down there was like living in a bean pod. One could see nothing but the bed one lay in. Our horizon of woods was the limit of our world. For weeks on end the trees moved in the wind with a dry roaring that seemed a natural utterance of the landscape. In winter they ringed us with frozen spikes, and in summer they oozed over the lips of the hills like layers of thick green lava. Mornings they steamed with mist or sunshine, and almost every evening threw streamers above us, reflecting sunsets we were too hidden to see. Water was the most active thing in the valley, arriving in the long rains from Wales. It would drip all day from clouds and trees, from roofs and eaves and noses. It broke open roads, carved its way through gardens, and filled the ditches with sucking noises. Men and horses walked about in wet sacking, birds shook rainbows from sodden branches, and streams ran from holes and back into holes like noisy underground trains. I remember too the light on the slopes, long shadows in tufts and hollows, with cattle brilliant as painted china, treading their echoing shapes. Bees blew like cake crumbs through the golden air, white butterflies like sugared wafers. And when it wasn't raining, a diamond dust took over, which veiled and yet magnified all things. Jones's terrorist goat seemed to be a natural phenomenon of that time, part of a village which cast up beasts and spirits as casually as human beings. All seemed part of the same community, though their properties varied widely. Some were benevolent, some strictly to be avoided. There were those that appeared at different shapes of the moon, or at daylight or midnight hours, that could warn or bless or drive one mad according to their different natures. There was the death bird, the coach, Miss Barraclough's goose, Hangman's house, and the two-headed sheep. There is little remarkable about a two-headed sheep, except that this one was old and talked English. It lived alone among the Catswood larches, and was only visible during flashes of lightning. It could sing harmoniously in a double voice, and cross-question itself for hours. Many travellers had heard it when passing that wood, but few, naturally enough, had actually seen it. Should a thunderstorm ever have confronted you with it, and had you the presence of mind to inquire, it would have told you the date and nature of your death. At least so people said. But no one quite relished the powers of this beast, and when the sheep lightning flickered over the Catswood trees, it was thought best to keep away from the place. The Bull's Cross coach was another ill omen, and a regular midnight visitor. Bull's Cross was a saddle of heathland set high at the end of the valley, once a crossing of stage roads and cattle tracks which joined Barkley to Birdlip and Bisley to Gloucester Market. Relics of the old stage roads still imprinted the grass as well as the memories of the older villages. And up here, any midnight, particularly New Year's Eve, one could see a silver-grey coach drawn by flaring horses thundering out of control, could hear the pistol crack of snapping harness, the screams of the passengers, the splintering of wood, and the coachman's desperate cries. The vision recalled some ancient disaster, and was rehearsed every night at midnight. Those who hadn't seen it boasted they had, but those who had seen it, never. For the sight of it laid a curse upon talkative witnesses, a curse we all believed in. You went white in the night, and your teeth fell out, and later you died by trampling. So news of the phantom usually came second hand. "They seen that coach again last night. Harry Lasbury seen it," they says. "He was coming from Painswick a-pushing his bike. He dropped it and ran home crazy." We committed poor Harry to his horrible end, while the coach ran again through our minds, gliding white on its rocking wheels, as regular as the post. As for the tiny tragedy behind the phantom, it had been jealously remembered to haunt us. The tilted coach, the splintered shafts, the wheels crooked against the moon, the sobbing horses kicking out each other's brains, the passengers dying on the moor. The image of that small but local disaster still possessed qualities to appall, which the more grandiose carnage of recent times had never quite overshadowed. As for Bull's Cross, that ragged wilderness of wind-bent turves, I still wouldn't walk there at midnight. It was a curious tundra, a sort of island of nothing set high above the crowded valleys. Yet its hollows and silences, bare of all habitations, seemed stained by the encounters of strangers. At this no-man's crossing, in the days of footpads and horses, travellers would meet in suspicion, or lie in wait to do violence to each other, to rob, or rape, or murder. To the villages around it was a patch of bare skyline, a baldness among the woods, a wind-scarred platform that caught everybody's eye, and was therefore just the place for a gibbet. A gibbet, consequently, had stood there for years, which the old folk could still remember. Below Bull's Cross stood a dank yellow wood which we knew as Dead Coombe Bottom. My brothers and I discovered a cottage down there, roof fallen, in a garden run wild. We played there often among its rotting rooms, running up the littered stairs, picking and gorging on the small sharp apples which hung round the shattered windows. It was a damp, dark ruin in the damp depth of the wood. Its rooms reeked of old beds and fungus, and behind the door, blood red with rust, hung a naked iron hook. To this silent, birdless, sunless shambles we returned again and again. We could do what we liked here, wreak what damage we wished, and strangely enough, no one disturbed us. Only later did we learn the history of the place, that it had been the home of the Bull's Cross hangman, that he had lived here with his son and worked at his trade, and had later killed himself here. The cottage in the wood had been specially chosen, close to his work, yet hidden. The times were hungry, his days were busy. He was a discreet and skilful man. Night after night he strolled up the hill to load the gallows with local felons. After a routine summons one storm-black evening, he was handed a shivering boy. Used to working in darkness, he dispatched the lad quickly, then paused to light up his pipe. He was turning to go when a cloud moved from the moon and lit up the gallows clearly. And in the rain-washed face that stared crookedly down at him, the hangman saw his son. To the men who stood by, he said nothing at all. He just walked back to his cottage, drove a hook in the wall, fixed up a noose, and hanged himself. Since when, no one had lived in Hangman's house, which crumbled in Dedcombe Bottom, where we played and chewed apples and swung from that hook, and kicked the damp walls to pieces.
Thank you, Malcolm Grieve, and there's going to be more of that next week.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk, your local community radio run by volunteers. Log on to our website at dialectradio.co.uk to find out more.
Now, it's time for what went down at the Iron Maiden gig with our very own Jeff Sparks.
The 5th of July 2008, a date that will go down in heavy metal's history books as the time when Iron Maiden performed for the first time in their career at a UK stadium. Now this venue was not Wembley or even the Millennium Stadium. It was the home of English rugby. It was Twickenham Stadium. Support for this event came from Lauren Harris, who was the daughter of Steve Harris, who was the bassist for Iron Maiden. Also on the bill was the Dutch symphonic metal band Within Temptation and also American-based metal band Avenged Sevenfold. Now this concert at Twickenham Stadium was part of the Somewhere Back in Time World Tour, which started on February the 1st in Mumbai, India, and will finish on August the 19th in Moscow, Russia. The tour is to support the DVD release of the 1985 concert video Live After Death, and also their recent compilation album Somewhere Back in Time, the best of 1980 to 1989. It was going to be the first time I've ever been to Twickenham Stadium, and also the first time I've seen Iron Maiden with Bruce Dickinson in the lineup. To say I was full of nerves is a serious understatement, and when I saw that stadium in front of me, I was totally awestruck. But mixed in with the nerves was a serious dose of adrenaline, and when Churchill's speech echoed around the stadium and the band burst onto the stage, with pyrotechnics exploding from the ceiling and around the stage, and they started playing the song Aces High from the 1984 Powerslave album, the nerves vanished and the adrenaline took over. They performed for 2 hours and the set list included songs from the albums Power Slave, The Number of the Beast, Peace of Mind, Somewhere in Time, Seventh Son of a Seventh Son, and also Fear of the Dark. The light show was one of the best I've ever seen. The pyrotechnics were some of the brightest and loudest I've ever come across, and the band for 2 hours were playing the songs. They were running around that stage. It was simply awesome, the best concert I've ever been to, and I've been going to concerts for 15 years now. I still look at the ticket stub and wear the Eddie t-shirt I bought for £20 and think to myself, I was there when history was made. Of course, getting back to my hotel in Guildford was another challenge. It was a case of queuing up to get into Twickenham Station, and the queue stretched all the way down Witton Road to the stadium, and then getting a train to Clapham Junction and then another train to Guildford. Now the reason why I was in Guildford, that weekend it was Guildfest, running from 4th of July to 6th of July, in Stoke Park. 3 days, 7 stages of entertainment, plus loads of food stalls and other activities to keep the masses entertained. The headliners on the main stage for this year was The Levellers, Blondie and the Australian Pink Floyd Show. Some of the notable bands for this year included The Damned, Kula Shaker, Dodgy, Kerry's Matthews, Fightstar and From The Jam. I was there because Bristol-based multi-influenced rockers Alien Stash Tin were performing at a major festival for the first time in their career. They were on the Surrey Advertiser stage, which included unsigned talent, both locally and nationally. Overall, the band enjoyed the whole experience. I feel we all walked away with a lot of memories and a whole list of bands to further check out. On the MySpace page for Alien Stash Tin is a blog written by John Wisby about the band's experience at Guildfest, and it makes for very interesting reading. Also on YouTube is 3 videos of songs that the band performed during their set. Now, I mentioned about us having a list of bands to check out. Well, one of the surprise acts was the Boss Hoss. Now, this 7-piece group hail from Germany and play a style of music which they describe as country trash punk rock. No one knew what to expect from this group, but come the end of the set, most people watching them, including me, my friend and 3 members of Alien Stash Tin, all agreed they were very good entertainment. I've even gone and purchased their album Stallion Battalion. Another band we discovered was a 4-piece from New Zealand called Shehad, who have in their career supported acts such as Motörhead, Metallica and Faith No More. As the evening wore on, we decided to go and check out From The Jam. We didn't get to see or hear much of their set because just as they started to play Eton Rifles, it started to rain. At this point, it was decided that most of us were tired and some had to work in the morning, so we got to the car and started a 3-hour journey back to Bristol. The whole weekend for me personally was exhausting, but overall it was a great experience. It was my first time at Guildfest, and from what I saw and from what I heard, I will be there next year, and that is when I will stay for the whole weekend.
You'll take my life, but I'll take yours too. You fire musket, but I'll run you through. So when you're waiting for the next attack, you better stand, there's no turning back. The fuel was sound, the charge begins. But on this battlefield, no one wins. The smell of ice cream smoke and a horse's breath is a virgin into certain death.
Now we come to this week's What's On Guide from Dialect and Radio. Starting with Friday 18th of July and at the Carlin Academy in Bristol, Butthole Surfers will be performing. Doors open at 6:30pm and tickets are £15 in advance. Also on 18th of July and at the Prom Bar in Bristol, Fat Man Swings will be performing. Doors open at 8pm and entry is £4 on the door. Moving on to Song of the Week, and I decided to present a group who I witnessed at this year's Guildfest. They are called the Boss Hoss, and they hail from Germany, and play a style of music they describe as country trash punk rock. This is from the album Stallion Battalion, and this is the track Truck and Roll Rules.
We'll be right back.
was The Boss Hoss with Truck and Roll Rules from the album Stallion Battalion. For more information, you can check out www.thebosshoss.com and also www.myspace.com/thebosshoss. Moving on to Saturday 19th of July, and at the Trinity Centre in Bristol, The Orb will be performing. Doors open at 8 p.m. and tickets are £14 in advance. Keeping with 19th of July, and at the Moles Club in Bath, Fortune Drive will be performing with support from Kiel Cassidy. Doors open at 9 p.m. and entry is £3 before 10:30 p.m. Finally, I come to 20th of July, and at the Thecla in Bristol, First Degree Burns will be performing with support from Yes Sir Boss and The Hit Ups. Doors open at 7 p.m. and tickets are £5 in advance. Also on 20th of July, and at the Beehive, Prospect Hill in Swindon, Cartoon Heroes will be performing. The gigs will start around 3 p.m. and entry is free. That is all from me. Thanks for listening and have a great week. Take care and goodbye.
Thank you very much to Jeff for his What's On and his review of Iron Maiden. What an absolute trooper he is. Well, that's the end of this week's Dalek Radio Show from the centre of Bristol. The show was produced by Matt Heap, who also treated us to his muses. Thank you to Simon Manley, who spoke to Anthea Page about the Converging World charity, and Ross Chester of Bristol Legends Detectives of Perspective. Jeff Sparks gave us his What's On and what went down at the Maiden gig. Next week, more of the fantastic reading of Cider with Rosie from the actor Malcolm Grieve, to whom we proffer our admiration and gratitude. The show was sponsored by The Converging World, an organisation that uses profit from wind turbines to set up more turbines and also to fund the work of established Indian sustainable development agencies. You can log on to their website on theconvergingworld.org, that's one word, or email them at info@theconvergingworld.org. I have been John Peters Collins.